Well, thank you, and thank you for being here. We are out of some items, and I want everybody to get what they want. So if you want anything we have run out of, we'll make a note of it. And if you'll pay for it today, I'll mail it to you, and I'll pay the postage. And we have everything in stock, so I'll take care of it as soon as I get back. But thank you for that. Well, how many of you perfectly understand your spouse? Good deal. Would you please explain her to the rest of us? I saw a book one time and it said, what a man can do to understand his wife. And every page in the book was blank. True. Not making that up. Yeah, that's true. Well, I want you to look at 1 Peter chapter 3, and this is the principle on which we're basing this final session. I'm going to go maybe a little quickly. I have often done this session in two, but I think we can do it in one and do it in the time that's been allotted. But there's a basic Bible principle. Much of what I'm going to tell you in this session is based on science. You are free to disbelieve it. You have to believe the Bible. You don't have to believe science. I don't believe them. I don't believe there's global warming. When I was a kid, we were getting ready for the ice age. And they're all talking about that. It'd be cold. And the fact is, it goes like this and it goes like this. And so, I don't even believe in weathermen. I always tell people, they don't know. The way I tell the weather is I look out the window. Oh, okay, a little cloudy, not too much rain. Looks to be in the 50s maybe. That's how I tell the weather. So if you want to disagree with any of the scientific conclusions that I'm going to suggest to you, you're free to do so, but they, I think, will make sense to you, and they'll help us obey this Bible command. Look at verse 7 of 1 Peter chapter 3. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them, that is, with your wives, according to knowledge. Dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. Heavenly Father, open our minds and hearts to the truth of your word, and we'll give you praise in Jesus' name. Amen. One of the greatest myths of 21st century America is that men and women are basically the same. Anything a woman can do, a man can do. Anything a man can do, a woman can do. That's stupid. First of all, men cannot have babies. Okay? Second of all, they don't really believe that because they don't want the ladies taking the firefighter test to have to carry the same load up the ladder the men do. You know, when you take a test to be a police officer, women do push-ups from their knees and men from their toes. Well, they don't believe that. They think, well, we have to make allowances. Well, why? Because we're exactly the same. They don't believe it. They say it. It's politically correct to say it, but they don't believe it. So here are some differences. Roman number one is differences. Letter A, there are physical differences. 7 weeks after conception, the male brain is bombarded with 10 times more testosterone than the female. I don't normally use that word in preaching, but in a couples class, I think it may be helpful if you don't understand that. 8 weeks after, the female receives a heavy dose of estrogen. So there are Roman number one differences, letter A, physical differences, and in the blanks there are testosterone and estrogen. By the way, baldness is caused by the male hormone testosterone. That's why women almost never go bald. So, Brother Easterly, I think you'd join me in saying to all you wimps with a full head of hair, number two under that physical difference is 16 weeks after conception, the male brain, such as it is, if such a thing exists, is doused with a biochemical bath which severs most of the left to right brain transmitters. Men tend to think with one side of their brain or the other at a time. Now, women don't do that. They go, bzzz, they go back and forth because they got connectors there. Well, we'll use a better word than that. Letter B, that brings us to mental differences. Because of these biological differences, number one, men tend to think logically. If A, then B. If B, then C. If C, then D. If a man says, I don't trust that guy, and you say, why? He'll say, you know, I saw what he did to such and such, and he told me this, and then he did this, and I just don't trust him. Women, number two, tend to think intuitively. Have you ever heard of women's intuition? Now, that doesn't mean it's wrong. If you say to a woman says, I just don't trust that guy. And you say, why not? She'll say, there's just something about him. She didn't give you logic. She gives you intuition. But so a man's mind is like when I took long division in math class in school, and they'd always say, show your work. They didn't just want the right answer. They wanted you to show your work. They wanted how you got there. That's how a man's mind is. A woman's mind is just, there's the big problem. 743,624 divided by 1,119, and here's the answer. But I just know it. Now, let me say what intuition is. All of us have had times when we've just had kind of a flash of insight. We've known something, but we haven't known why we know it. I've had a couple occasions where I've been counseling a lady, and I've said, can I ask you a question? Were you molested as a child? And they said, how'd you know? And you know how I knew? I don't know. Probably something they said triggered a little thought that I couldn't quite remember, but it was back in my mind. Probably there was something similar to somebody else I'd counseled. But something was in there, maybe asked the question. Now, that's intuition. So a woman doesn't always know why she thinks what she thinks, but it doesn't mean she's always wrong. Her brain works faster than she can explain. Okay? We got one side at a time, make it both sides connected, and so she can't always explain it. Doesn't mean she's always wrong. Doesn't mean she's always right. I don't want to say, well, that's it. My whim's intuition's always right. Not, our logic's not always right either. Okay? But we tend to think differently just because of the way we're made. That's why we have these difficulties in communication and understanding, because we just have different stuff going on up there. Letter C, there are emotional differences. Men base their feelings of importance and well-being on their ability to achieve results. Women base their feeling of importance and well-being on relationships and feelings. So if a man buys a car, why'd you buy that car? Well, it gets 24.6 miles a gallon on the city and 32.8 on the highway. It has a warranty that goes for 5 years or 50,000 miles bumper to bumper and 100,000 miles on the drivetrain. It's got a 3.8 liter engine, which has been one of the best engines out for the last 25 years. You can tell all the things about it. Say, well, why'd you buy the car? Oh, it's just so cute. Now, women will look at gas mileage, and men do care about the appearance. But generally speaking, the man wants to achieve results. Remember, I talk about going on the trip, and you tell the gas mileage and the average speed and that sort of stuff. Men like to play games where they can win. Women like to play games where they can be together. Okay? It's just how. Now, these are generalizations. They are not always true to the same degree with each person. But they're generally true of men and generally true of women. And I'm going to tell you this stuff because then you can understand how your spouse thinks and feels and how to relate to that. All right? So, I have a lot of guns. I don't shoot a lot just because of time. I can shoot in my backyard. And I got a skeet trap that I can hit my foot on and throw the skeet out and shoot myself out there with my 12-gauge. But when I go to California, there's a preacher out there, and he's never asked me that. He's just said, we're going to go shooting tomorrow, and we go to the shooting range. And obviously, I don't take my guns when I go to California. I can't get them on the airplane very well. And so I shoot his guns or another guy in the church guns. And you know what I always do? I always look at the targets to see if I shot better than them. I always check that out. All right, I want to see how I did. And I'll see which gun does better. We use that gun more. Okay, and that's how a man is. You know, if you're good, he wants to be better. But women aren't that way. Women say, oh, it was so nice. We just did such and such together. All right. Number two, men need to solve problems alone. Women like to help others solve problems. See, a man is very slow to ask for advice. A woman's very quick to offer advice. You let a man have a problem, and we'll say, "Yeah, you'll figure it out, Brother Gilbert." That's the way we affirm each other. Get a little woman and say, oh, I got this stain and I don't. Oh, if you put palm olive on it and let it stay overnight and do such and such. No. Men will only ask for advice for two reasons. One is when they really can't figure it out themselves and they need help to get the solution, they will ask for advice in that. Men don't even talk about their problems. Let me get back to that in a little bit. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. But men need to solve problems alone. Women like to help others solve problems. Number three, under pressure, men tend to withdraw and women tend to talk. That's just how we are. Women get relief from their problems by talking. Men, when they have a problem, they just go in their shell. There was a saying in one culture, another said, when your husband retreats into the cave, do not follow him or the dragon that lives there may breathe fire on you. Okay? Now, a man's retreat may be watching four football games in a row. And sometimes you may watch him just because he wants to, but sometimes he doesn't know what to do. He's trying to figure something out. He just kind of gets in there. And men, they let their problems simmer in the crock pot. Women, they're going to pick away at them until they get them figured out. Okay? I'm not saying one's right, one's wrong. I'm telling you why you have troubles when you try to communicate, all right? Under pressure, men tend to withdraw, and women tend to talk. And that brings me to the difficulties. So we have different expectations. Women expect sympathy. Men expect solutions. Women want reassurance, number two, under that. Men offer resolutions. I'll talk about that a little bit, and then I'll come to number three. Men don't talk about their problems except to get advice or to blame somebody. Okay? I'd have been on time. One of those stupid semi got in front of me, went 23 miles an hour all the way down the road. I couldn't get by him. But they'll blame somebody. So where do you need help? Let me go back over it again. Number two is difficulties. Letter A, different expectations. Number one, men expect sympathy. Women offer solutions. Number two, women want reassurance. Men offer resolutions. That's as far as I've gone in giving the outline. So here's what happens. Guy comes home from work. His wife has had a problem with the children. She's feeling burdened, pent up. It's hard to take her little children. Not grandchildren. Grandchildren are wonderful. There's no problems with grandchildren. But it's hard to take care of your own kids day after day after day. So a man comes home, the woman's just had a bad day. Now, men speak about half as many words in a day as a woman does. So the man's at work and he's been having to use his words to get his job done. The woman's at home, she hadn't been using her words for anything. So he comes home, he's got about 40 words left. Yep, no, thanks, that's good. Good night, love you. And she's got about 40,000 words left. So she comes home and he says, how's your day? And she says, it was terrible. Well, what's the matter? Oh, the kids did this and then they did that and then this happened and that happened. Now, the man's normal response, and it's a sincere response and it's a well-meaning response, is to tell her how to fix the problem. Well, sweetheart, I'll tell you what you do. Just lock the kid in the back room. Use those Bose earphones we got, or those little foam ones we have on the airplane, and just ignore them. They'll be fine. Okay. But we give them a solution. Now, here's what's going on in the woman's mind. It's not conscious. Remember, women think intuitively. So this is not all listed out. But here's the process that's going on. If she stops talking, if she accepts your solution, I should say, then the conversation's over. Well, she doesn't want to stop talking because she doesn't feel better. And she won't feel better for another 22,000 words. Because she feels better by talking about her problem. You deal with it by withdrawing. She deals with it by talking about it. So, if she takes your solution, she won't get what she's looking for, so she instinctively finds something wrong with your solution. Oh, no, honey, I can't do that because right next door is a social worker and she'd arrest us. And so then the man comes up with another solution. Oh, well, then, just take them over to your parents. Put them in the basement. Your parents live out in the middle of 40 acres. Nobody's going to know what happens there. And she's still not done talking, so she finds something wrong with that solution. somewhere along there, the guy begins to think, she's blaming me for this. Now, she's not, but he wouldn't be talking that much about a problem if he wasn't blaming somebody for it. And so he feels she's blaming him, and then they get in a fight. Yesterday, I went home. Now, my wife is extremely frugal and extremely prudent when it comes to herself. When it comes to our children, and particularly our grandchildren, she'd make Obama look like a conservative. And so I give her a chunk of money for groceries and gifts and stuff. I also give her 10% of any honorariums I get, and I give her money for doing my DVDs and doing the sermon CDs and mailing them out. And she gets a good sum of money, okay, a very good sum of money every year from me. And then she spends it, almost all of it, on the kids and the grandkids. And so she said, honey, I was just figuring up, and you know, if I spend this much on the birthdays and this much on the Christmases, and we got to get for this person and this person, do you know how much that is a year? And da da da. Now, what I know is she wanted more money. Now, she has my wife has, I bet you, $3,000 or $4,000 tucked away in the bank, and here and there, she's that way, okay? And she's frugal with that, and that came because there's a debt that somebody had helped her get back, but that she'd loaned to somebody. So I said, well, honey, look, I don't like these long conversations about this stuff. I'll just give you another $50 a week. And the numbers you gave me, that's more than enough to take care of what you're concerned about. And she said, well, thank you. And then we never talked about it again, right? Dumb move. She's taking the $50. I still have to hear the story. I still have to hear all the figures and how they came up to and what she spent everything on and what it was all for. You see, get this distinction. Men want to be heard. A man wants to speak his piece. I told them this and I told them that. And they don't really care if you agree with them or not. They don't really care if you like them or not. They just wanted to give you a piece of their mind. Women want to be understood. They want to know that you get it. My wife wanted to be sure I didn't think she was just cheating me. My wife wanted to be sure I didn't think she spent. I know she didn't spend money on herself. I know she's prudent and frugal and careful about that kind of stuff. But so that I came home about 5:20 or something like that, and about 5:25 offered the $50. And we left at 6:10 to go to our junior senior bank, and we're still talking about it. And then we talked about it after the banquet, and then we talked about it a little bit later than that, because she wasn't trying to talk me into anything. She wasn't trying to prove her point. I agreed with her. Yeah, you need more money. Here's more money. You can have it. But what was happening was she wanted to make sure I understood. So that's how we are, okay, guys? And if you don't get that, you're going to try to solve your wife's problem. She's not looking for that. And I'll say this a little bit, you got to just listen to her. And you got to try to understand what she's saying. Well, let me go on. Number three, women expect to improve men. Men expect to fix women. Women always want to make things a little better, even if they're already good. You take a woman and you put her in a professionally decorated house. In 3 months or less, she'll want to change something. Maybe in 3 minutes or less, you want to change something. Okay, you know, I was wondering, if I took those flowers over there and put them there, if I got a little such and such to put there, I wonder how they would look. We are not like that. I got my office beautifully decorated. Some ladies in the church did it. One lady studied decoration, my principal's wife, and does a great job, and had a bunch of stuff. And I said, nothing sacred. Throw out what you need to throw out. Put up what you need to put up. And you know what? Now what I want? I don't want anybody to mess with it. I don't want it moved. Just leave it be. You say, when are you going to update it again? Never. Now, well, I'm pastor. It's fine. Leave it be. I like everything just like it is. Now, somebody may give me something. I might say to Doreen, can we find a place for this? Or can we do that? But women, it's called the nesting instinct. And so these walls are really pretty today, but they won't be pretty in 3 years. Because somebody's going to come up with a magazine and say, now the colors for 2020 are this, or 2015 are this. Okay? And so, women are improvers. Now, here's what they do with their husbands. They try to improve them. They try to tell them how to dress. They try to tell them how to speak. They try to tell them how to drive. They try to tell them how to eat. They try to tell them how to behave towards other people. They try to tell them all kinds of things because they want to make them better. That's what women do. You know, doesn't matter how good you are, you know, they got to fix it up a little bit. Now, men want to fix women. It's not the same. Here's what men do. Men open the hood, find the broken part, put a new part in, close the hood, and drive. Right? That's what we want to do. We'll fix it. Car's broke. What's broke? Well, I think it needs an alternator, okay? Unscrew those deals, put the alternator back on, and away we go. Maybe charge the battery up quick because it went down from it. And what's wrong? Tire's out. Well, we got another tire. Let's put it on there, and we'll go down the road. Just get it fixed. But we're not improvers so much. So here's what a man does to his wife. He'll say, his wife says, honey, I just feel such and such, and I just think such and such. And it's an illogical thought. And so we'll open up their mind, and we'll say, oh, no, that's wrong. You shouldn't think that way. Think this way. And then we can close the mind, and now they're better, right? Now, before I go to the how to do it part of it, just a question, ladies. You've been working on improving your husband for how long? Don't tell me. 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years. How's it working? Fellas, you've been telling your wife she doesn't think right and she ought to think like this and she shouldn't feel that way. That's a helpful statement. You shouldn't feel that way. Oh, good. Now I don't. We don't live by our feelings, but you can't just turn them on and off. So, you guys have been trying to fix your wives. How's that working?
Almost there.
Is she? Write a book and I'll teach it.
Just one more homicide. Yeah.
So, let me give you the directions, all right? Now, ladies, I'm going to reverse the order and talk to your husbands first, make you feel better. I'm also giving them 6 pieces of advice, and I'm only giving you 5. Different expressions. I'm sorry, thank you. Different expressions. A woman will say something like this, you never talk to me anymore. And a man will say, I'm talking to you right now. Now, what she means is, I would like to spend more time together. But he's taking it very logically. Okay? And you have to hear what they're saying. You know, when I first started preaching out, and my schedule just got busier and busier and busier, and it doesn't get much busier now because it can't. So I do about 60 or 65 meetings a year, and that's, you know, there's only 52 weeks, so that pretty well fills it up. So my wife was saying, honey, it's so busy, and, you know, you got another meeting, and she wasn't mean or screaming or yelling. But I would tense up and I'd say, hey, this is what the Lord wants me to do, and I didn't ask for this, and that's where God put me. And then it dawned on me, my wife wanted me to be home more. This is good. Do I want to be saying, honey, do you only have 2 meetings this week? Couldn't you get one for Saturday also? So I don't want. Now, she didn't say, I just really miss you when you're not here, and I just enjoy our time together. That's what she was meaning. Right? So the woman going to have those intuitive feeling kind of expressions. The men are going to have those very logical deals. You know, the wife will say, wife said to her husband, we used to sit close together in the car. We don't sit together. You don't sit close to me anymore. And the husband says, I didn't move. What she's saying is, I'd like to feel the connection and I'd like to feel the closeness that I felt years ago. And what you need to do is reach out and put your arm around her and say, oh, sweetie, I love you, and let's go out to dinner tonight and do such and such. But don't take it logically. It's not going to work. All right. Letter. Yeah, that's true. You'd have a hard time. They get the little center seat, some of the bench seats you could do. Roman number 3, let me give you some directions. Here's 5 directions for men. Number 1, listen to your wife with empathy. Empathy. E-M-P-A-T-H-Y. I'm sorry about my voice, and it does make my words a little less distinct than I wish. Empathy, not sympathy. Sympathy feels for them. Empathy wants to feel with them. Now, I got to warn you, when you do this, it's not going to be a cure-all, but it's going to help. I learned this. I learned that my wife would tell me about the problems of the day because she wanted me to understand. She wanted me to know what she was going through. And she wanted to know how she felt. And so she started telling me something that happened. I said, oh, wow, that must have been really frustrating for you. And I thought her face would soften and a tear would glisten in her eye and she'd be so happy that I understood. And she said, it was frustrating. And then she wanted to tell me why it was frustrating, okay? But at least I was a part of the way there, all right? So listen with empathy. Try to, okay, what's it like to watch three kids all day? What's it like to have those frustrations? What's it like to feel those things? And you try to put yourself in her position. That's a great Bible principle. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. All right? Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. Listen to your wife with empathy. Number two, do many small things for your wife, not just a few big things. I did not say do many small things instead of a few big things. I said, do many small things for your wife, not just a few big things. Years ago, my wife wanted to buy a sewing machine. And things were, you know, okay financially. We paid the bills. We didn't have much extra money. But she wanted a sewing machine. And there was a place that that had road construction, had a hard time getting business, and they were giving great deals. I went in there and bought her, and this is at least 20, oh my goodness, the kids were little, so probably 25 years ago or more. I bought her the 20 to 25. I bought her the best sewing machine in that store. Speedy Sew. And I, this machine, it did monograms. It did all kinds of fancy patterns. It changed the oil in your car. It was a very, very impressive machine. And then she wanted a serger. And a serger, that's the thing that'll cut off the material nice and straight and then kind of sew it up while it does it. And so I bought her a serger. That wasn't the best serger in the store. It was a good serger. It was $3,000. I put it on a credit card, and the Lord helped me. I don't believe in keeping balances on credit cards, and I paid the thing off. Now, I'd be honest with you. I wanted to do that. I love her, and I wanted her to be happy. She would never have asked for that much. And I was glad to do it. I thought that would count for a lot. I thought, like, when I was busy, she would just go play with a sewing machine. But I found out, and I even said to her, I bought you that sewing machine. Well, the sewing machine's nice. Was that? I found out. The one big thing is nice, and you ought to do that. You ought to do what you can, but you got to do a lot of little things. You got to leave a note when you go off to work. You got to hide a sticky note in the cupboard she's going to go in. You got to bring flowers home sometimes. You got to get her candy. You got to once in a while, when it's not some special day and you haven't done anything stupid, buy her a dress. See, I don't know her size. Well, shame on you. But if you don't know, just guess small. No one ever got in trouble for guessing small. You bring home a two and say, that's what you look like to me. You're not in bad shape. Number three, ask her counsel. Ask her counsel. Many times I will say, sweetheart, we have this opportunity. I'm thinking about it. What do you think about it? Now, one time, my dad and I were going to buy rental properties. I don't have Social Security. And I thought, well, I've got to do something for my old age. And you can buy property pretty cheaply in Saginaw. And so I said, what my dad and I talked about, I said, well, Dad, I don't have much time, but how about I got good credit. Neither of us had any money, so it was the beginning of a great business relationship. We were both broke. And so I said, I'll pay all the money, and you do all the work, and we'll split all the profits. My dad said, great. My wife said, I don't think you should do that with your dad. I said, why? She said, you don't have time. I said, it wouldn't take any time. He's going to do all the work. I'm going to provide all the money. She said, your dad's not going to go work in those houses and not expect you to be there, too. I said, no, I told him. It's all clear. About a week or two later, my dad said, well, I found a house down here, and we'll have to put a roof on it, but you and I can do that in 2 or 3 days. I said, Dad, I thought I was going to get all the money, and you're going to do all the work. And he said, oh, yeah. My dad and I never bought a house together. He bought houses. I bought houses. We never bought. My wife was right. There was no logical reason for her to be right. How did she know that? She just knew it. Intuition, yeah. I had a guy come to me, and he's a business guy, and does kind of, he'd been in trouble. He had a bunch of video games, and the video game thing went down many years ago. I mean, he had them back in the Space Invaders, Pac-Man, Centipede, Galaxian, those days. And he was really doing well, but then the thing kind of crashed. And so he said, look, I'm not able to get the credit I was. He said, what I'm doing is I'm borrowing money from my friends. I'm buying out businesses and places that are going to go out. I buy stuff for pennies on the dollar, and then I sell it. And he said, I'm paying my friends 50% interest. And my wife said, I said, honey, this is a pretty good deal. We'll have to borrow the money, but we'll only pay 10 or 12%. We'll make 50. And I said, but you know, it could be dangerous. She said, what could go wrong? I said, well, it entirely depends on the character and integrity of this man. And we'd known him for a long time. His wife had been in our youth group when I was a youth pastor in Flint. And she said, oh, I wouldn't worry about that. And I borrowed money and gave it to the guy, and I made enough money that when a man drove up from Georgia to put in a swimming pool for me for free and I just had to pay for the materials, I had the money to pay for the materials. Now, ask her counsel. Doesn't mean you're always going to do what she says, but ask her advice on things, on some things. Number four, appreciate her motive when you cannot appreciate her message. Appreciate her motive when you cannot appreciate her message. You're gone all the time. Okay, that's not a nice statement. What does it mean? It means I like it when you're here. Okay? So, appreciate the motive when you can't appreciate the message. You know, men and women don't always have the same idea about things. Men think underwear was made to be left on the floor. It's easier to keep track of. Look good. Four on the floor means eight in the drawer. We got to figure it out. Women think the house should always be nice and neat. And so you know what she wants to? She wants to make it a pleasant place. She wants to make it a good place. I've been in houses where, I'm not exaggerating, the stuff is stacked up on every counter that high. There's no place to sit down. I've been in houses like that. And if your wife's not that way, appreciate the fact she wants to keep the house nice. You may be irritated. She's nagging you about it. But appreciate the motive when you can't appreciate the message. Number five, offer support before solutions. That must have been really frustrating for you. It was. Oh, I can only imagine. No, you can't. Yes, but I'm trying. Offer support before solutions. Sometimes be wise. If you think you know a solution to the problem, let your wife talk until she seems to be done. And then say, honey, do you want any help with how to fix that? Or you just wanted me to know what you're doing? It was an astounding thing for me to learn that people sometimes didn't care what I did as long as I knew. One time we had some girls in our school many years ago smoking. So we gave them 3-day suspension and we took them out of the special music groups and things that they were in. And this one guy came to me and he said, look, Ed, I understand you taking them out of the music groups. I understand that, but don't take them out of school. They're there to get an education. And the other guy came and he said, look, I understand you're suspending him from school. You had to do that, but don't take him out of the music groups. That's where they serve God. And I remember talking to one guy. I said, well, I really don't know what I could do about it now. And he said, oh, Pastor Ouellette, we didn't want you to do anything. We just wanted you to know how we felt. Sometimes she doesn't want you to do anything. She just wants you to know how she feels. So offer support before solutions. And number six, guys, if you get none of the rest of them, get this. Accept her as she is. Do not try to adjust her to what you wish she was. What you communicate to her is, I don't love you like you are. You're not good enough for me the way you are. You need to change these things for me to be happy with you. Don't do that. Just love her. Toward the end of my dad's marriage, mom's been in heaven, I think, 4 years now this coming month. So at the end of it, my dad said, well, I decided I'm just going to love her. And when he died, when she died, I thought he'd be glad. But he misses her. And he's many times said, I think about her every day. I think about this and I think about that. And, you know, he got to obeying the Bible and he quit trying to fix her and he just loved her. Just love her. Like she is. You know, the Bible says, him that is weak in the faith, receive ye. But not the doubtful disputations. Acceptance is something God wants us to give to everybody. Not approval. Guy comes into your church tomorrow and he's wearing a 3-piece suit and he's got a gold watch chain and carrying a King James Bible and has 3 precious, perfect little kids and a beautiful wife. You're going to shake his hand and look him in the eye and say, we're glad you're here. And if a guy comes in, he's got tattoos on his face and more body piercings than you have dollar bills and pants barely stay up, then you're going to shake his hand and look him in the eye and say, we're glad you're here. So you don't have to do anything to be loved at the Loomis Park Baptist Church. You don't have to do anything to be accepted. You may need to grow in grace to please God, and you may need to grow in your Christian life to be able to be the right husband, right wife, right parents, and all that kind of stuff. But you don't have to do that to be loved. And your wife needs to know she doesn't have to do anything for you to love her. Accept her as she is. Do not try to adjust her to what you wish she was. The young man came to our church to work as an intern one summer, and I knew he was interested in one of our young staff ladies. And this young lady's like a daughter to me. And I let the guy come, and, you know, he was very slow, and toward the end of the summer, he made his move. But earlier on, he was talking to me, and he said, how much do you do in trying to, you know, teach your wife and develop her and strengthen her spiritually? And I said, almost none. Now, I'm supposed to teach the church. My wife is there, and she listens, and she may learn something. But that's not what I do when I go home. When I go home, I love her. And I said to this young man, you listen to me. Don't you ever marry anybody you are not willing to love like they are for the rest of your life. And he was interested in that young lady. Toward the end of the summer, he started talking to her, and she was willing to talk to him. And so they started doing their talking and their stuff. Now, he's the kind of guy always liked to ask you probing questions, which would show how smart he was. And so he would say something like, what book of the Bible do you think most teaches loyalty? I don't know. It's a book of Ruth. Oh, okay. And so he's gone away after school. He's come back. They've been talking on the phone every couple of days and having a pretty, you know, some development in their relationship. And he starts asking her these questions. He says, well, hey, me, like it or love it, that's what I'm going to be. You can always have to. I'm going to dig and I'm going to probe. And she very sweetly said, well, and she was already thinking about ending the relationship. He didn't know that. And she said, well, you know, I'm not telling you that's wrong. That's certainly fine if that's where you want to be. But that would mean that I wouldn't be the person you'd want to end up with. And I didn't mean that. But it was too late. Okay. But he didn't take my advice. He was going to fix you. He was going to push. He was going to probe. He was going to improve. He was going to dig. He's going to, you know, show how smart he was by showing her how dumb she was. Accept her as she is. Don't try to adjust what you wish she was. By the way, that guy's dead, and she's happily married now. So just so you can get the end of the story. Let her be, women. Five things. Now, ladies, I want your husbands, number one, to get number six. First of all, mainly to get number six. I want you to get number one. I believe I would speak for most men in this room when I say, if you get number one, we can take it. If you don't get any of the rest of them, if you just get number one. Are you ready for number one? Do not give unsolicited advice. Does anybody misunderstand any of those words? Do not give unsolicited, that means they did not ask for it, advice. Do not give unsolicited advice. Don't give unsolicited advice. Do not give unsolicited advice. Somebody said, people in Michigan are the bossiest people. Kurt LeBeau says, people in Michigan are the bossiest people I've ever met. Every sentence they say starts with, you should. I don't know if that's true, but I heard a lot, you should, you should, you should. Well, honey, what I think you should do, well, I think what you ought to do, well, I think you ought to tell him, well, I think you ought to do, don't give unsolicited advice. Because it makes him think you think he's dumb. Now, I know we shouldn't have such fragile egos. I know this doesn't speak well for us. I'm not here to defend us. I'm not here to attack us. I'm here to explain us. All right? So do not give unsolicited advice. If he's driving, you're sure it's the wrong way? Just smile. Say, honey, is this the right road? Yep. Okay. When he turns around, don't say, I told you so. Don't give unsolicited advice. Number two, do not make your or try to make your husband talk when he withdraws. Now, because you feel better by talking about things, you think he'd feel better if he'd talk about it, but he's the opposite. Talking about it bothers him. You know why? Because he hasn't figured it out yet. He doesn't know what he's going to do. He doesn't know what to say. He wants to have some time to get his thoughts together. And it's kind of an unconscious process for him, just like rejecting the solutions is an unconscious process for the ladies. But when he withdraws, just leave him be. He'll come out after a while if you don't chase him in. You know what happens? You chase something in a cave, it runs further in the cave. So do not try to make him talk when he withdraws. Number three, make it clear you do not blame your husband for the problem you're describing. My wife has done particularly well on this one. She'll often be telling me something that troubles her, and she'll say, I know this is not your fault. I know you can't do anything about this. But she wants to tell me, then I'm happy to just let her vent. How she feels. One time I was riding in the car And she was talking about something, and I felt it was maybe a 30-second value, the item, and she thought it was maybe a 10-minute value, you know, that it needed that much attention. And I was getting irritated in my spirit, and it was Christmas time, and for some reason, the words of that song came to me, a Christmas song with a tune with a little different words, and I just thought, let her blow, let her blow, let her blow. And I thought that, and I did. And it helped me. It helps her, because I didn't say anything. I just let her talk and nod and respond and sympathize and tell her I'm sorry and try to listen with empathy. Number four, make requests short, direct, and non-manipulative. In other words, sweetheart, would you please take out the trash? Now, we may not do that, but we understand that. And it's irritating but not offensive. Don't say, honey, do you suppose this week we could finally get the trash out? I've been asking you for 7 weeks. The health department's been checking out the neighborhood. It's a good thing I wasn't home, or that I had to open the door and they would have seen what's going on. There's no room for either car in the garage. You think maybe this week we get the trash out? You just signed up for 4 more weeks of garbage in your house. Okay? Make requests short, direct, and non-manipulative. You know, the underwear on the floor. Honey, would you mind putting that in a hamper? Let's see. Is that yours? I don't know. Do you wear Hanes size 42? I hope it's mine. If it's not mine, I wonder who else's it would be. Number five, put things in perspective for your spouse. You know, here's what happens. A lady will have a 10% unhappiness and 90% happiness. But she wants to talk about the 10% because to her it's like the little pebble in the shoe. And if she can just get it out, she can be all right. It's not that the pebble's ruining her life. It's not that the pebble's going to make her die. It's a Morton's neuroma. That's all it is, okay? It's just a little irritation on the bottom of the foot. It's no big deal. But when she talks about it, to him it makes him think she's unhappy with everything. So say something like this, honey, you really do a good job. I'm really happy with almost everything. There's one little thing that's been bothering me lately, and if you'd be willing to help me with this, I'd really appreciate it. I'll tell you a story and I'll stop. Man had an aunt and an uncle that loved each other dearly, never had children, but it's such a sweet relationship, and they always just exemplified what a marriage ought to be, Uncle Bill and Aunt Teresa. And he always wondered what it was. He had a visit. He was going to go to their house for a weekend or something. He said, I'm going to try to ask him and find out what's the secret of their happy, sweet marriage. Now, he knew that Uncle Bill always, 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 when he went to the bakery, bought cinnamon rolls. And he knew that Teresa always, 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 when she went to the bakery, bought glazed donuts. So he went to the bakery and he got some cinnamon rolls and some glazed donuts, because Uncle Bill always got cinnamon rolls and Aunt Teresa always got glazed donuts. And they had their breakfast. They got their evening visit a little bit, went to bed, and he got out the stuff and put it on the table, and he watched Uncle Bill reach over for a glazed donut and Aunt Teresa reach over for a cinnamon roll. And he said, oh, I don't think I'll have to ask the question. I think I figured out the secret. I don't want you to think I think this is true, but there was just a little story. And somebody was being shown what hell was like. And in hell, there was a large banquet table with every kind of good food you could imagine. But the forks and the spoons were all about 3 feet long. And the only requirement was you had to hold the end of it, and nobody could get it into their mouth. And they're straining and trying, and they're all frustrated and unhappy. And then the guy said, I'm going to show you heaven. And heaven was a long banquet table and every good kind of food you could imagine. And the forks and the silverware was all about 3 feet long. And they were all happy and having a great time. He said, wait a minute, I don't understand this. What's the difference? And so he said, well, in heaven, we feed each other. Well, in a heavenly marriage, you feed each other. Well, in an awful marriage, you always try to get it for yourself. Father, thanks that you've given us the instruction to dwell with our spouse according to knowledge. And may we men understand that it is particularly important to our wives that they be understood. And would we make an effort in that direction, in that important area in our life? Your heads are bowed. I've done this once. I'll do it after this session too, I guess. And I wonder if you just say, you know what? I learned something that I need to practice, or I was reminded of something that I need to begin to do again. Pray for me. If you say that, slip your hand up high. God bless you. Father, help each of us and bless these marriages. Make them sweeter and stronger. And may they then make this church stronger. In Jesus' name, amen.